You already know what time it is. It's the Why We Stayed podcast. Hit 'em.
Well, welcome back to the Why We Stayed podcast. Man, this is episode 10, which I gotta say before we even get started, I am an Enneagram 7. So typically my problem in life is that I get started on something and then I don't finish something. So anyone that knows me, I've probably started a lot of great books. I get to page maybe 100, 110, and then I go, sweet, let me start a new book. So anyway, if for anything else, we've made it to episode 10. We are turning the corner. This is very exciting. But listen, without further ado, I just want to welcome to the podcast a friend who I met through kind of the social media circles, but him and I were doing youth ministry. We almost worked together at one point, or I was trying to get him to work with me. I forget how exactly that went, but I want to welcome to the podcast, Alan Orcutt. Alan, how are you, man?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for asking me to do this. We did almost work together.
It literally felt like I was like a college recruiter. Like I wish we were playing Division I football or something, but it was just being youth pastors together. But anyway, dude, Alan, why don't you share a little bit? I'm sure there's some people listening, of course, that know you. They know a little bit about your story. But for those that don't, where are you from? Who is Alan Orcutt, man? Give us a quick rundown of where you're from, what your life looks like today.
Awesome. Yeah, so I'm Alan. I live in the Dallas area. That's where I'm from. Grew up here in Dallas. Quick overview of me. Grew up in a church home. Always in church. Felt the call to ministry. Went to Bible college. Youth pastor for a few years. And now through a series of events that I'm sure we'll go through, my wife and I are back in the Dallas Metroplex, and I'm working for a great company. Working inside sales. I've got a 2-year-old little girl, and my wife's a wedding coordinator. So she started her own business 2 years ago, and, you know, we're just getting to enjoy this season of parenthood and being back together, honestly.
It's incredible, man. And we certainly will jump into some of that transition for you. And so again, but just to kind of reiterate, you have been involved in church all your life though. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I was at church every week, multiple times a week, amazing parents, you know, typical Christian home. And, you know, in high school really felt that, you know, this is what I'm supposed to do for the rest of my life. And so basically devoted all my time to that. I would get out of high school, I would go straight to the church, whatever that looked like for the youth ministry, filing stuff, sending emails, making phone calls, you know, anything I could do just to be involved, setting up and tearing down on Wednesday nights for youth group, and then, you know, straight into Bible school and serving, working at the church. Basically, my life revolved around it. I was so passionate about it, and still am, but
yeah,
whole life. Church kid. I'm the typical church kid.
Maybe for someone listening, there is a, I don't know, maybe there's someone that wants to be a youth pastor. Maybe there's someone that has grown up in church as well, but maybe they don't feel, you know, as passionate about it as they once did. Or maybe, you know, maybe now that they're working in church, or maybe now that they're volunteering in church, it looks a whole lot different, you know, than what they thought it was going to look like. What piece of advice would you have for someone that's maybe listening, that's interning at a church or they're volunteering at a church and it's just going a little bit different than they thought it was going to go?
Yeah, that's good. I think, you know, in whether you go to Bible college or not to prepare for ministry, I don't think you can ever really be prepared to be in ministry. You know, there's just things that they don't teach or things that you don't learn until you're actually in it. But I think where ministry can really, at least in my experience, where it was really difficult and it wasn't that this isn't what I was expecting moment was when, you know, I tried to do ministry on my own or I tried to do ministry in my capacity and my ability. And you start to kind of separate the dependence on Jesus. I think, you know, the initial reason anybody would want to be in ministry or would feel that desire is because your life has been changed, or you've been connected to somebody who you've seen life change happen, and you think, I want that. I want to be a part of that for the rest of my life. And that's what it was for me. And so, you know, the initial life change that Jesus brings was, you know, why I fell in love with the church. And so I think when we start to kind of get away from that and even realize that that isn't all that working at a church is, that isn't all that ministry is, there is work, there is, you know, just stuff that has to be done, like any job that you work. I think as we get further and further away from that and start leaning on what we can handle and what we can accomplish on our own, I just think it gets really, really tough.
And Alan, why don't we kind of start, you know, pivoting the conversation a little bit towards maybe when that started to happen in your own life? I know whether it was, you know, in your marriage or in your church life or any of those things. I mean, there was obviously a significant hurdle that you guys went through, and, you know, would love for you to just share a little bit about that.
Yeah, I would say that I have probably lived majority of my life that way, trying to depend on me, on Alan, what I can do, on my strength. And I think for a long time in my life, not a long time, I'm only 28, but for, you know, a lot of my life, it was going pretty well. It wasn't, you know, going bad. I was getting where I wanted to go, or I was accomplishing what I wanted to accomplish. And it wasn't until I stopped being able to do that where I started to lean on something else. And for me, that was alcohol. I'm an alcoholic. I'm almost 450 days sober today. And, you know, basically the past 3 years of my life and my family's life have been a roller coaster of, you know, living with someone and through addiction. So for me, that became, you know, kind of my crutch. I didn't know how to cope. I wasn't taught this is how you handle stress. This is how you handle failure. This is, you know, the healthy ways to process and deal with those things. And the further and further I got into realizing I'm not enough, I'm not capable, I'm not qualified, you know, instead of turning to Jesus, I just turned to as much alcohol as my body could take.
And Alan, let me ask it this way too. Again, first off, man, I appreciate you sharing it, because I think for anyone that is stuck in addiction, or anyone that feels like, again, they're listening and they can relate to what you're saying, I think that the number one hardest thing to do is just to simply confess it, to share it. But again, it's in that sharing, it's in that willingness to confide in someone or a few people or whatever, that again, that true freedom starts to come. But you know, one of the things that I love about your story is it didn't stop at addiction, but you've chosen to engage the difficult part of it. Again, maybe better said is, it didn't stop at addiction, but you chose to engage the darkness. You chose to engage the difficulty, and you were fighting for something instead of just kind of sitting back and letting something fight you or letting something overtake you. You know, for someone that's listening, man, that maybe is going through addiction themselves, or maybe they're in a sin cycle, or they're in just tremendous shame, what advice would you have for them on how you were able to really kind of re-grab and get a hold of your life?
Yeah, you said it. I think the hardest part for me and for most people is to be open about where we mess up, where we're weak, where we fail. I don't want people to see that in me. You know, I never wanted people to ever think I couldn't handle something, I couldn't do something. I wanted to look like I had it put together and could take on, you know, anyone and anything. And so I think my journey may have been a little shorter had I gotten to that point sooner where, you know what, it's not about what people think about me. It's not about how I look or, you know, what talking about this does for, you know, how I appear. That doesn't matter anymore. That can't matter if we're going to, you know, progress, grow, become healthy, you know, followers of Jesus, we can't be concerned with that or it won't happen. And so I think the first part for me was just understanding, like, regardless of whatever else happens in my life, it doesn't matter what people think or how I look. What matters is that I'm healthy. What matters is that, you know, I kind of get my life together. And so that was the first step, was being okay with that and understanding that this is not a bad thing. You know, this isn't like some kind of disqualification that now there's only so far I can go in life, or there's only so much I can do in life now because you're an alcoholic. So, you know, this is your ceiling. You know, that's not true. For whatever that struggle is, we all have, you know, something. The second thing for me is surrender. You know, just fully and complete, you know, trust in God that every part of my life, every area, not just my addiction, but as a father, as a husband, you know, as someone who manages money, who's a steward of what God's given me, as someone that, how do I spend my time? How do I take care of my body? That, you know, all of that has to be surrendered. There's nothing that I can hold on to. And while addiction and alcohol was definitely something that I had not surrendered, I think, you know, most of my life was not surrendered, again, because I wanted to do it. I wanted to accomplish it. I wanted Alan to look good and to show everybody just how good I was.
Dude, I think.
And truth is, I found out just how good I was, you know, at leading my own life.
Of course. Yeah. No, and I, yeah, and I, you know, I think I can appreciate, because I can totally find, you know, certainly bits of my own story in what it is that you're sharing as well. You know, I think that there's a certain part, and maybe this is less of a question and maybe more of a statement, but I'd love to have some dialogue around this. I think there's an interesting thing, man, that happens where we actually cover or rather we call good behavior and morality, we call that Christianity, and we call that faith. And I think the problem is that as we grow up and we realize that just following the rules doesn't actually give us a relationship, and because then it becomes this transactional thing where, but God, I did A, B, and C, so why don't I have this? Or why don't I have that? And so now God has become a genie in a bottle as opposed to an actual father figure that we have relationship with. And, you know, I think that maybe for a young person that's listening, that they have lived kind of this exhausting life where they have followed the rules and they have exactly what you described, Alan, like they've lived the Christian upbringing. They've, you know, they didn't make the mistakes in high school that their other friends made. They even went to Bible college and they even did this or that or whatever it was. You know, what would you say, man, just for the sake of dialogue, what would you say has been the most eye-opening thing, whether it's about your upbringing or about your involvement in church? What has been the most eye-opening thing that you've experienced since all of this kind of came out, since you've obviously reclaimed possession of your life? Like, what would you say is that one thing that you just was like that aha moment for you?
Well, first I'd say, yeah, it is, living that way is exhausting. That's just the perfect word for it, because trying to live up to this standard or expectation that half the time other people don't even have, we've just set that, you know, in our minds, it's exhausting and it's impossible to continue forever. Life happens at some point to everybody in some way, and, you know, we all have our ways of dealing with it. But yeah, again, I think that aha moment for me was, so just a snippet of kind of the build up or the lead up to my rock bottom, is what, you know, the clinical term or the term in recovery is, was, 2 years ago, I was helping my parents move. They were working. I'd been kicked out of my house. Hunter, my wife, had said, I've had enough of this. I was getting worse and worse at hiding it. And I was living with my parents away from her and Mitchell. And I was helping them move one day. I thought, this is boring. I'm going to go get a couple drinks. So I'm moving and drinking. I get into a car accident, intoxicated, taken to jail. I thought it would be the worst night of my life. A few months later, at even a worse rock bottom. I spent the night in a detox center. I had shown up to work that day intoxicated, lost my job, and really at the lowest point of my life, sitting at that detox center, looking around me, trying to figure out, like, what in the world happened? How am I sitting here in this room right now? I really had that realization of, if I am in charge of my life, if I am Lord of my life, this is where I end up. You know, like ultimately down to how good is Alan, this is it. And, you know, I think in whatever capacity that is for whoever's listening, there's something that we're trying to live up to, attain, achieve, or become. And at some point along the way, for me, thankfully it was at 27, not 67 or 57, but at some point, whatever that moment is, we realized, wow, if it's all dependent on me, you know, it's not going to go that well. And, I found that out, like I said, thankfully very early. And so I think that's the aha moment for me was, if I want to live a full life, like a life that I enjoy, if I want to have a family, if I want to be blessed and get to bless others and just see God use me, I've got to let go. And I can't keep making the decisions for myself. Mm.
Alan, you know, another thing, man, is, as you were sharing, because I think just the beauty of your story is, and again, this is going to sound insanely shallow, but just try to stick with me. The beauty of your story is you don't have to get better at communicating, but God needed you to get better at the story. And what I mean by that is, like, I think a lot of times if there's young people listening, maybe there are people that have been propelled in a church setting or propelled in a small group setting or, you know, even within their own homes or their schools or whatever, just because they have the ability to communicate or, you know, they're willing to communicate, right? I mean, we've all been in that one small group where the one guy just does not shut his mouth and he's constantly, you know, sharing whatever. But I think the beauty of your journey is you had the upbringing, you had the experience, and God still put you in a place where you were able to communicate his message. But God loves you so much, and he loves those listening so much that he doesn't just want you to communicate his message, but he wants to come and impact yours. And, you know, I think the beauty of what it is that you're sharing is there, just because you're not, quote unquote, in ministry right now, it doesn't mean that you'll never be again. But even a step further, I think that because God's been able to refine this part of your journey, which is your life, I mean, this is your marriage, your family, your future, man, now he's going to be able to propel you so much further. And again, I can't say it enough, you know, for those listening, that the good behavior, the speaking, the opportunities, I mean, you're listening to two former youth pastors talking on a phone right now. That, I mean, we've experienced the stage, we've experienced lights on us, we've experienced people that have said, hey, thank you so much for sharing this, that, and the other thing. I'm telling you, if I could shout it from the mountaintops, that is not the destination. You know, the retweets, the people posting on, you know, your story, some quote that you said or that you stole from Stephen Furtick, whatever, that is not the end goal. And, you know, I think, Alan, I'm just so encouraged, man, by your story, because, again, the guy that I met years ago, I was inspired by, I was encouraged by, I thought you were doing great things for the Lord. But the guy that I talked to today, I am so much more in awe of, because you've chosen to surrender. You've chosen to, you know, fully lay that thing down. And, you know, one of the main questions, man, that I have for you as well is, to grow up in church probably only made that addiction and that sin and that shame so much heavier, because I'm sure it didn't just feel like, you know, I'm sure it didn't just feel like you were letting your family down, but it felt like you were probably letting God down. You know, for someone that does have that church experience, but they are, you know, struggling right now, what would you say? What would you say was kind of your main opportunity for how you were able to get past that shame?
I think that the it's all about where you share it or who you share it with. Because the fear that I had was like, if I share this with my family, that I like alcohol or that I'm a, you know, like my drinking is getting serious or whatever. Like if I share that with my family or the people I work with at this church or, you know, those around me, like that's not going to be a good conversation. I'm going to lose my job or, you know, my family's going to think this way about me or, you know, and I was so concerned about their, you know, opinion or their thoughts about it. All of that changed and all of that really just didn't matter whenever I went to Celebrate Recovery. I think, you know, Celebrate Recovery doesn't have to be the place that someone goes if you are battling an addiction or even just a hurt habit and hang up is, you know, Celebrate Recovery is not just for people with addiction. You know, there's people that are battling anger, battling depression, battling anxiety. You know, the list is endless of the things that we go through, and Celebrate Recovery encompasses all of that. But there's no judgment, there's no fear, there's no worry, there's no looking around. I think we can feel this in any church that we've been in. There's no looking around at, you know, feeling like either you're being looked down upon or if you don't look the right way that, you know, you don't really fit in or you don't really belong. That is the last thing that you feel in the right kind of environment, in a healthy environment. Because everybody at Celebrate Recovery understands, man, I'm there with you. You know, I know what that's like. I know what that feels like and I've lived it myself. And, you know, we're just here to walk with you, to do life with you and, you know, and help you, you know, regain control, get back in the right direction.
You know, and I think maybe for those that are listening that maybe don't have a church upbringing, my prayer is that as you listen to this today, if that is you, and if you don't really care about church, or if maybe you've been hurt by church, but you're still listening to this podcast, man, I hope it encourages you to know that even a pastor can have struggles. And I hope that it encourages you to know that, you know, when Alan talks about Celebrate Recovery, that's what I think the church is. I think it's a place where the Bible would say that God didn't come, you know, Jesus didn't come for the healthy, but he came for the sick. And I know that, you know, sure, there could have been times when even myself or Alan or whoever, we can put on a show and pretend like everything's okay. But I'm so thankful that God doesn't, you know, go to the pretend part of you, but God goes to you, like the you part of you. And, you know, I think, Alan, the only other thing that I'm curious about, that I'm sure our listeners are also curious about, is it really matters who you got married to as well in this situation. Because I think that there's, you know, we can talk about marriage and we could, you know, do a whole nother podcast about that. But I think in sickness and in health, and, you know, when you guys say vows to one another, it's so simple in the world of young Christian marriages and wanting to get married right away and blah, 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 you know, that whole thing. But man, share with us, what was that like when your marriage was not only put to a test, but man, it seems like you guys are now on fire where God is actually blessing the fact that you were able to really engage some of these harder conversations.
Yeah, that's so good. I'm glad you asked that. I'm so thankful for my wife and just the strength that she has and has had through this. And really, the way that she has listened to God and allowed him to guide her through our story and really through probably the lowest point of her life as well. It takes a lot of strength, a lot of courage, a lot of faith to tell your husband and the father of, you know, your 1-year-old, you can't live here anymore. You have to leave. I'm calling your parents. You are not healthy, and I have to protect myself and my daughter. Yeah, that takes real strength and courage. And if it weren't for her, making that decision and multiple after it that were really difficult decisions to make, and even, you know, for me, difficult decisions to take in and accept and live with, we wouldn't be here if she hadn't done that. And if God hadn't led her through that and she allowed him to lead her through that. Because the easy way is, well, you're messed up and this is a bad situation for me, so I'm out. I'm taking Mitchell, our daughter, and I'm out. You know, that's the easy route. And she very well could have done that. But instead she said, no, I love him. I'm committed to him. And I believe that this isn't who he really is. And, you know, it took a while. It took, some time to see that turn around and see that change. But God did it. God brought restoration in us and through her. And, yeah, like you said, we've never been in a better position. Life is still a challenge. You know, I'm still living with consequences and repercussions from my actions, with probation and everything that comes with having a DWI. But at the same time, we've never been more blessed, because of my, walk in recovery and through my sponsor. That's how I got the job that I'm at now. We're working downtown. We're living downtown. Just really a dream situation for us. And so through that pain and that really difficult time, because of, my wife's faithfulness and obedience to God, and now, us doing that together and allowing God to continue to lead our steps, because recovery doesn't end. I'm not recovered and now I'm good. You know, I will recover and be in recovery forever. I never stop growing. And, the day I think I've stopped, is the day I'll be right back where I started. And so, it's just been honestly great for me to have her and see just how God's used her through this past 2 years, really.
It's so good, man. I love hearing what you're saying about it's constant recovery. It's not, you don't look at an athlete that gets hurt on the field. He, tears his ACL and he says, okay, doc, put me through the, give me the shot or give me the medicine. It's like, no, you are in constant recovery and your knee may never be the same. You can still play. You can still, go out there and make a difference, but you'll always remember and you'll always be impacted by that injury. And I think that's okay. I think maybe for those listening maybe there's a spouse listening today who they're not in addiction themselves, but their spouse is, or maybe their family member is, or maybe they grew up with a dad who was, or a mom who was. And, I think it sounds like, Alan, you're not living your future in fear. Like, you're not living thinking that, oh man, any day now this could just happen again. But you've chosen to live in faith. Chosen to live with a God that could bring me out is the same God that can keep me out and that can continue to sustain me moving forward. And, I want to encourage you, man. I'm so thankful that you took the time here with us today. And, for those that are listening that, maybe wish I would have asked Alan a couple more pointed questions or this or that, man, I would just encourage you, just give him a follow him, follow his wife, and just follow along in his story. Because again, this is just a quick opportunity for us to share a quick phone call. But man, my prayer is that, Alan, that you're going to do even bigger and better things, man, than you ever did before. So thanks for the time. And again, for all those listening, man, we look forward to catching up with you guys here in future episodes. Thanks so much.